Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Radio Network. We've got a great show. I've got a few announcements I need to make first. And we've got Ashley starts the East City Road Show in Little Rock. I imagine that's Arkansas this coming Tuesday night, followed by Houston. And then we'll be presenting in 15 cities between now and when East City opens in May. So she'll be talking about contact from the heart, teaching the healing of negative influences process, showing footage, and talking about crew opportunities for this season. And if you want to find out more about that, check out esetievents.com, and that'll give you all the details to come out and support her in this mission. Anyway, I'm excited also to be a part of Michael Tellinger's Ubuntu event in South Africa in April. That's going to be interesting. And again, you can go to esetievents.com to find out more about that. A lot of things moving up. Looks like I'm going to be going to China and Africa and a few other countries here this year. Don't know when, but it's all going to be coming up here real soon. We've got John Vivanco on our show, and he's been a professional remote viewer for 20 years. He first came to my attention after reporting his experiences with Walter Nozod and in remote viewing the craft and other activity at Matt Adams and Andy Setti. And we're going to hear more about that from him tonight. I just got out of the dentist, so my tongue is just now thawing out from the Novocaine, so bear with me. He was part of the civilian remote viewing organizations after government declassified the program, and his organization was hired to investigate the unknown, including work with the FBI after 9/11 on counterterror issues and with corporations on business issues. His searches for lost treasures led him to a collaboration with the National Geographic Channel. And he continues to this day developing ideas around TV, teaching, investigating, and running a team of remote viewers on many exciting projects. His current focus lies mostly in the realm of untangling and heading out on expeditions to investigate locations of high strangeness. And I'm excited to be having John at the ranch here. So he'll be at East SETI May 19th. Through the 22nd, teaching his remote viewing workshops from the basics to ET contact. And again, if your early bird registration is now open for that workshop, and if you go to esetievents.com, that's you can find out more about that. Without any further ado, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, James. Appreciate being here.
Now, I know Walter's been to the ranch several times and had some pretty amazing experiences. And how did you find, was it through Walter that you found out about East SETI?
No. This is many, many years ago. I've been following what you guys have been doing up there for quite a while. And I was working with National Geographic probably around 2010, 2011, on creating a bunch of show ideas for a series. And at that point in time, I'm thinking, boy, East SETI Ranch has got to be in the mix here. So we started running projects on some of the video footage that you guys were capturing and putting on YouTube of these lights zipping around in the sky, coming off the mountain, going into the mountain. So we started remote viewing that stuff to try and understand if it was something truly anomalous happening. And it is. And at that point, our producer was speaking to somebody up there, one of you guys up there, to arrange a visit and some filming, but we never got to it, unfortunately. And, you know, since then, I've just been following what you guys have been doing, and every once in a while I'll task the remote viewers on the strange stuff that happens up there, but it has been literally on my bucket list to go up there for quite a while now. And I think this is actually the perfect opportunity to do a remote viewing class, perfect location for it. Remote viewing works really, really well when you're in a deeply supportive and higher vibrational atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And I think that the ranch is going to cover those aspects. Plus, you have this just energy from the mountain. So not only what you guys are doing, but you have this energy from the mountain that is going to be incredibly supportive of it. So yeah, I just super excited to teach a class up there with you guys.
Yeah, we had some scientists come out, and they had PIP technology and amazing stuff. And they can photograph the whole vibrational light spectrum, and it breaks it up. And so you can see any changes, any energetic changes in that. And I think it's Harold Oldfield or something like that. It created this, but amazing technology. And they actually videotaped the mountain. And they were freaked out. They said they've never seen so much energy come off an area before, even the pyramids of Giza and things like that. He said that mountain is generating so much energy.
Right.
That would be a good one to remote view. Like, what is in there generating so much energy?
Oh, we have definitely seen some of that stuff.
Yeah. And then also too, the sessions when we do our transpersonal release sessions, they film one of those, and they saw a vortex forming right over us, and people's bodies pixelated into light and validated everything. It was pretty interesting watching that technology being used up there. It's where science, I love where science and spirit merge, you know, and come together.
Right, exactly. You know, a lot of these tools just haven't been developed to measure the more subtle frequencies. I mean, I think the human body is the best tool ultimately, but you know, in this technological world of proof and whatnot, it doesn't fly very well. You know?
No, it doesn't. And I always say, I mean, I know exactly who's contacting me by how it feels within my body.
Right.
I can tell which group is contacting because they have different effects on my body. And we try to teach other people that, and everybody's different. They all have their own signals.
Exactly. Yep. They have their own.
Yeah. Now, we've got pretty educated viewers on here, and most everybody knows what remote viewing is. But for the people that have never heard of remote viewing, maybe you can give a quick scenario on what it is.
Yeah, sure thing. So remote viewing is basically, it's a protocol, right? It's a protocol that uses our innate clairvoyant ability to describe things that aren't in front of us, things that we can't see, touch, feel physically in front of us. Everybody has clairvoyant ability, and what remote viewing does is it just puts it into a structure or a format of approaching it. You know, in one remote viewing session, you could be viewing something from the Earth's history, deep in the past, and in another session, you could be on the other side of the universe. So there's nothing that limits what a viewer can and can't remote view. There's no time, whether it's the past or the future. It is all within the realm of the remote viewer. It's kind of like traveling time in the universe with your mind. And remote viewing was developed, you know, I think everybody knows this, by the U.S. Intelligence Services, actually contracting Stanford Research Institute back in the late 60s, early 70s, to see if they could use psychics as spies. They had heard that Russia was, or Soviet Union back then, was developing a program. So they needed to see if this, you know, was a threat or not. So they employed SRI, Hal Pudoff, Russell Targ, a couple laser scientists that were interested in this type of phenomena to dig into it and see if there really was a threat. And basically at that time, most people thought that psychic information could not be controlled and could never be reliable. You can have, you know, hits and misses, and you could never create a system that is consistently reliable. So it was really their job to figure out if they could. And they did. They brought in a guy named Ingo Swann, who was a natural psychic, who really helped them develop the program. And it came down to a very long protocol. It's a lot of structure. A remote viewing session can last 20 pages, sometimes even 30 pages, and you're going through all these different ways of collecting information just by sensing. Now, I got to say that remote viewing is really not what the word for it implies. It's neither remote nor is it viewing. Because when you, James, I know you know this, when you have psychic information coming to you, it comes in totally different ways. You know, you get feelings in your body. You can get smells and tastes. You can just have a deep knowing. And then you could also have the viewing part, which is just imagery playing out in your head. But more often than not, it's just an amalgamation of all of these different things coming in and not just the viewing part. And then also, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, where does remote viewing actually occur when you're remote viewing? Well, you're quieting yourself down. You're going inside of yourself. And all that information is coming within you. It is not something that's on the outside of you. It's not remote. It is actually you. You know, it is, it is you as the whole universe, you as everything. You could not view it if it were not you. So, and I think, you know, all these guys that are going down the physics pathway to try to explain remote viewing are really missing the boat, because I don't think you can explain it through physics and that type of phenomena through physics. I think it comes down to a very Zen attitude. You know, it's happening in you, so you are everything.
Yeah, I agree. That's the teachings of Buddha. You know, the whole universe is within, and actually, it's the teachings of Jesus too, but most people missed it. You know,
exactly right. Well, you know, I spent about 5 years living in a Zen center, and you know, during that time, I was also the director of operations for Transdimensional Systems, which was our remote viewing company. And I had a struggle because, you know, I was a lay monk, but yet I could still work on the outside. So I was running this company with Prudence Calabrese. We were running it together at that point in time. And I was also meditating, you know, and taking part in the Zen Center full time. And I had this huge struggle of, well, if I'm living here, I should drop everything that deals with the outside world and just go into this completely, only this, only Zen. And it was interesting because at that time, the teacher at the Zen Center, she said to me, she just out of the blue, she said, John, you know, in order to be the best remote viewer you can possibly be, you've got to let go of every shred of yourself. And it was like, you know, it's that moment where I realized, holy cow, these two things are one and the same, because the whole process of remote viewing, when you're engaging in it, is to let go of your ideas about what's there and what's not there constantly throughout the whole session. It's the same thing when you're sitting on the cushion, you know, letting go of yourself. So at that point, it just turned into this one single thing. And I think remote viewing, you know, it teaches people how to let go of themselves.
Yeah, I agree. You know, like, I always like that saying, who would you be without your story, you know? You let go of your story, you find out who you are. And there's so many people so attached to their stories, you know?
Yeah.
And I met a guy this morning that was very attached to his story, and I just sat there and smiled at him. And he thinks he's the mayor of, I'm in Mexico right now, and he thinks he's the mayor of the town, and he can sit wherever he wants, and he tells everybody where to sit at the restaurants and everything else.
And he
made sure I knew who he was, you know. I just sat there and smiled at him.
It's interesting, huh?
Yeah. And I said, wow, you're really attached to your story, aren't you? And he didn't know what the heck I was talking about, you know, but I thought it was kind of funny. But anyway, now, did you ever work with David Morehouse, or I think it was John McGonigal?
Joe McMonigal.
Oh, Joe McMonigal, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so interestingly, I was never in the military, and the people that I worked with were never in the military or ex-military. We formed shortly after it became declassified in 1995, and we were a thorn in the side of the ex-military remote viewing community. Because we got an investor who put over $1 million into us, and we had a full-time remote viewing team. We had government contacts. We were working with FBI and DIA and DOD on the one hand, And we were also working with corporations, and we were getting a lot of publicity. We were doing demonstrations on TV news shows like CBS Sunday Morning and stuff like that. Yeah. And so what happened was, I believe that the narrative of remote viewing had to be contained and controlled as it was making its way out to the public after the declassification process. And because we were not part of that structure of declassification, we had a covert paramilitary group who was constantly harassing us. For instance, we'd be on the phone in the days of landlines. This is like late 90s, early 2000s. Your phone would start clicking. You're talking to a friend. All of a sudden, someone else would come on and say, "Stop what you're doing, or we'll kill you." Sometimes houses would get vandalized, or you'd come home after going to the grocery store and houses all locked up. Yet you go inside and your furniture's been rearranged. Finally, what happened was they blackmailed our investor to pull out and started to kind of pull us into setups that could potentially cause us to go to prison or get into deep trouble. Mm. So we had to shut down at a certain point because of all this harassment. But I kept going with it after we shut down in different capacities, still working with remote viewing teams, working on the media aspect, especially because I feel like people need this. People need to know that even though this is created by the military-industrial complex and it does have sort of a darker vibe around it, I'm trying to lighten it up and turn it more, pull it more away from that and show people the exciting things that they can do with it and where it takes you ultimately on this spiritual type path. But so that said, sorry, this is a really long explanation. Yeah. We never really worked with the ex-military guys because of that. Well, I know Joe, and I know Joe's a good guy, but we're still on the outside of all those, the ex-military crowd.
Yeah, I sat down with him back in the 90s, I think, and I started talking about all these beings that I was experiencing. And he kind of explained to me, he goes, "Well, we don't go there. They give us a target. We go to that target. We find out, you know, what's going on there." And they're more focused on, you know, the business of the government and military and that and those things like that. And then I think after I showed him some of the photographs and the pictures that I had, then he started having the contacts. He started having contacts after that. So I think, you know, that like you're saying, kind of they kind of box it. They want to box it. And, you know, I think that standard military remote viewing, I think, is pretty limited. And it's kind of stays under the astral level or around that level in the physical. And then, but when you really get into the more advanced stuff, like with Morehouse, when he remote viewed me, he said these huge golden beings appeared to him and just said, "Come back later. You know, you have work to do." so it was kind of funny. But they'll test you. You know, if you have an open mind and loving heart and pure intentions, you're going to get through. You're going to be able to work with these other beings, but. You know, if you don't have that, I'm not saying John doesn't, I mean, or any of these other people, David or any of the other people, but I think from what I saw back in the 90s, that it was very limited. It didn't really go interdimensional. It didn't get into the fifth dimension on up. It was very limited in either 4D, mainly what's happening on 3D.
Right. Yeah. Morehouse uses a slightly different method. I know he's a pretty spiritual guy, and he uses a slightly different method than the other ex-military viewers. He uses extended remote viewing, which is he puts himself into a deep trance, as opposed to writing stuff down on paper. You know, so I think he'll just lay down, you know, and go that route. And honestly, I think that way is. It seems to be a little bit more applicable to 4D because you can begin to interact in that zone as opposed to just reading the zone. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, when you're sitting there writing stuff down on paper, it's like you're reading it as opposed to experiencing it. Now, you still are experiencing it, but I don't know if you're experiencing it as deeply.
Yeah, I agree. I really like David. I've had a few interactions with him, and I was very impressed. There's a lot of people out there. I noticed a lot of times it seems like the women are better at it, because a lot of them they haven't had that side of them, their spirituality, their emotions and things like that. They haven't been as suppressed, you know, over time. And a lot of women seem to make better remote viewers. Is that the case that you found out?
Yeah, I found that, except a lot of times the women get very annoyed with all of the structured protocol. You know, the guys like it. But I've got to tell you one thing that remote viewing did for guys is that it kind of allowed them to explore their psychic side. Because here you have the military that created it, and now these guys can go, oh my gosh, military created this, I want to learn it. It's finally legitimizing it for me. When, you know, all throughout the past, women had the women's intuition that they would trust. Now men have a something that they can grab onto. But yeah, I do find that women can be very good at it. And you know, oddly, I mostly teach women more than men these days, which is kind of curious. I don't know why that is, but yeah, you find that women will get annoyed with the protocol. And because the protocol is so extensive, I'm one of those people who basically will pick and choose what part of the protocol I want to use and mix things up a bit rather than sticking to this very strict path and pattern with it. And that's very militaristic to stick with that path and pattern. But, you know, the protocol was developed by Ingo Swann, who was an artist as well as a psychic. And he took a lot from Ward Collier, who was a parapsychologist back in the, I think, early 1900s, and wrote some books. And a lot of these things that we do in remote viewing are basically little exercises that Ward Collier had created, and Ingo Swann expanded on them and put into a big, huge construction, you know?
Yeah. I was wondering, have you, I don't know if you can talk about this, but have you done any remote viewing concerning the moon and Mars and what's happening there?
Oh, heck, I love to talk about that. Yeah. So the moon is incredibly fascinating. It's a little bit weird to remote view. So I'll tell you what happened once when I was viewing the moon. So the way we work as remote viewers is we work blind. In other words, we don't know what we're remote viewing beforehand. We just are given an 8-digit number that is connected to what we're supposed to remote view, and we just run through the protocol based on that. So I was doing this session, you know, I started this session, and obviously I had no idea what it was, but at one point I closed my eyes and I bilocated. Bilocation is a process that happens in remote viewing sometimes where you're in two places at once. You know, you're at your desk writing it down, and then you're in the other location 100%. So what happened was I closed my eyes. All of a sudden, I found myself I was staring at this, like, gray wall in front of me, gray rocky wall. And when you bilocate, you have some limited movement. So I turned my head and looked up towards the sky, and I knew that I was not on Earth. I figured I was probably on the moon. And so I turned my head again and realized that I could see the edge of a crater. I am inside a crater, and right in front of me is a huge airlock door. And then I moved and I looked towards the center of this crater, and there were these little beings running around in there working. They had like they were small, they were short, probably 3 to 4 feet tall, and they had heads that were sort of oblong and shaped like a caper. You know what a caper is, that food.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And they took notice of me at that moment. And there was also this blue glow around the crater. So they took notice of me, and I got the intense feeling that I'm not allowed to be there. They know I'm there. And so I took off. I left there. So I get my feedback, and it was the Aristarchus crater. I was supposed to remote view the Aristarchus crater, and the reason for the blue glow coming within the crater. So what happens on the moon is that for a lot of remote viewers, if you go there, things take notice of you that you probably don't want to have noticing you. They're aliens for sure, but they are probably of a lower astral mm-hmm. vibration, and they're doing a lot of watching of us, taking Earth resources, processing stuff up there. Not just that, there are things on the moon that we found that are like resorts for elite humans. Mm-hmm. There are like spas and huge amounts of supplies, cavernous locations, all huge structures that go into the moon with supplies in them and just, you know, devoid of any life. And you have, well, a lot of humans up there as well.
Mm-hmm.
The moon is one of those places that, and I know Ingo Swann ran into this as well, and he actually wrote about it in a book that I think it's out of print now, but it was called Penetration. And he writes about the same experience where he was asked to go to the moon. He was given coordinates by some guy that was running a covert group trying to understand what these structures were on the moon. And he got the same stuff. You know, he got beings there on the moon that basically chased him off. And the guy that tasked him was very concerned that he got noticed, if he got noticed. Because oftentimes they will follow you back here.
Yes, that was my next question. if you ever had one follow you back. I know a lot of these guys don't like being seen. And once you see them and know who they are, they come back and they try to make your life miserable. But, you know, we teach people how to deal with that, how to move those energies out of your space. But,
right, exactly.
Yeah, so Mars, what have you seen on Mars?
Mars is complicated. At one point I started to kind of map out Mars with remote viewing. We would take the photographs, satellite type photographs that they, you know, didn't erase or edit, airbrush out the cool stuff, and remote view some of these things, especially in the Cydonia region. And you know, like the face on Mars. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first session that I ever did on that, and then I had other remote viewers do on that. We got just an amazingly huge structure with low relief columns. It was falling apart. There was a lot of sand that had created dunes inside the structure, had blown in. Like stuff that was very akin to ancient Mayan stuff here on planet Earth, and a lot of relics, pottery, shards, just junk literally everywhere. We also got in other taskings, we got life. There is indigenous life forms on that planet, reptile like. There's also possibly some type of being human type, not human, but a small probably remnant from the deep past of Mars still living there underground, most likely sheltered. We got flora and fauna. I mean, the planet is not what they're telling us it is. We also have lots and lots, like the moon, of different types of beings who are living on it and set up base, especially the reptilian type.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often that when we're remote viewing a location, go into a location, viewers will hear sort of an alarm sounding off, and they will know instantly that they have some net or something that catches sort of a paraphysical 4D essence of the remote viewer probing the location. And at that point, you just got to go. You can't stick around.
Yeah, they do seem to know what you're up to and what you're doing. And I know people that are some of the lead scientists that have been working with the technology to go back and forth to Mars. And
yep.
they've been saying we've been going back and forth since the late 60s.
Yep.
So, you know,
right.
That's,
you've got Andy Basiago with his story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't looked at, we haven't specifically looked into that stuff, but I'm you know, I know that you know, the secret side of our government has been using portals, well, since at least the Philadelphia experiment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have that stuff happening on Mount Adams as well. And I know that they're probably also trying to capture and use that essence of Mount Adams for a portal too, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I know there's so many things going on up there. I'm really curious did that one landing, the video of the landing there that we took. Did you get a chance to take a look at that and see what that was about?
Oh yeah, so that one is really, really, really interesting. The So the viewers are talking about this very intense electrical energy. If you were up there, you would hear kind of static and popping sounds. Mm-hmm. What was happening is that this is a vortex that was forming, something coming out of it. It is directly related to, it could not happen without the mountain. And the viewers are talking about this intense energy coming from the mountain, this vortex spinning thing happening, and stuff shooting out of basically a hole. Mm-hmm. So you've got these, now when you say a single craft, it was not necessarily a single craft in the conventional sense, in the 3D sense, because if you could... Now, you were filming with infrared, or no, with night vision.
Yes.
Now, if you cannot see it in the video, but the viewers were getting this, these things that were shooting out and shooting up from this vortex. So you have this like flickering light moving across on the ground.
Yes.
It looked almost on the ground, but they were as the lights faded out at the end, they were shooting up. They were shooting out. So every single one of those lights that you see like tailing out and dimming out and flashing out is not going away. It is, in a sense, changing its light frequency and moving up and out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's really weird stuff. But it is completely dependent upon the mountain there, because what this mountain has is a huge, huge amount of, well, like you had Oldfield or the guy you were talking about earlier, measuring frequency around the mountain. So this mountain has a couple things going for it, like other mountains, like Mount Shasta as well. It has a load of telluric type energy. It's an earth grid point. It is a magnetic anomaly. You've got a complete dropout of magnetism, if you're talking, you know, in a geological sense, and then a huge increase of magnetism right next to each other. And where you find these types of situations, you often find portals and deep interest by dimensionals that move through there. It's kind of like if we lived in a stacked universe, a stacked multiverse, and we're, you know, in one of these layers of the stack, the magnetism and the telluric type energy, it sort of like bends the multiverse points to touch each other, the stacked layers to touch each other, and allows for travel through it. And that's what you're getting there. And you're getting a load of different things there. You're not just getting one type of being doing it. You're getting a lot of weird stuff. And then you're also getting a heavy, deep interest by covert type groups.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They told us one time, I had a guy in Hawaii, he was a very renowned psychic there. And he told me, he said, everybody wants the vortex. Everybody wants your place. And he said, the bugs want it. The reptilians want it. The government wants it. And he said, the Pleiadians are working with it. And he went through the whole, and he said, just hold your ground there. You know, hold the energy there. And he's right, you know, because we have had a lot of interference. And we had to move these guys out, and we've had some really high beams come in all the way up to the 13th dimension that we've been able to connect to. And even these Anunnaki beings, I'll have to show you some pictures of those, but they're over 8 foot tall. And the woman that appeared to me, her name was Inha, and she's over 8 feet tall, and she's wearing the headdress, and how they cover their cone heads, basically.
Right.
And just beautiful. Her energy was so beautiful and so powerful. And I think she's between, I can't remember if she was a sixth or ninth dimensional being, but they just exude so much energy. And I don't know if it's been your understanding, but you know, people want to pigeonhole, you know, Anunnaki as evil reptilian. And,
right.
and I go, well, there's reptilians, and there's Marduk, who made a pact with the reptilians. And then the fallen Anunnaki, which are they're more human. They have the cone head type things. And they were above the royals, and the royals were offspring. Some of them were hybrids. But they have the benevolent Anunnaki that are returning now. To help right or wrong, you know, to help take care of the fallen Anunnaki and bring them before the councils. And you got the Palladians, the Orion Council of Light, those guys that already had their wars with the reptilians and liberated their sectors there. And you've got all these different beings appearing there. But I find out especially throughout the UFO community, most don't have a clue as
right.
the higher dimensional aspect of it and the spiritual side of it. And then, you know, others are trying to make it all negative. You know, it's either a demon or a gray or a reptilian, you know, and it's all bad or
right.
it's all nuts and bolts. But they're missing the big picture, you know, what's the bigger picture, which is really more important, because that's where we're going to end up, is uniting with the rest of the universe here for
yeah. sure. Yeah, exactly. I think it's important that at that particular point, this should happen in Mount Shasta as well, but at that particular point, that there's an anchoring of a spiritual way of life for mm-hmm. these energies to come into the earth easier, an easier pathway into the earth. Because, you know, what happens with these types of locations is that you've got very materialistic people who eyeball it for their own control purposes. And mm-hmm. And if there's nobody around there who is really interested in pulling on the spiritual aspect, because since you have this stacked multiverse and this energy flowing through it from every universe you could possibly imagine right there, you can tap on the extremely high vibrational dimensional beings to come in and help shift things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really vital. You know, I mean, when you get to like, you know, the physical aspect of the mountain, it's what it allows. It allows this travel and transfer of energy. I mean, I don't know. The place just is endlessly fascinating, and it's more remote than Mount Shasta, and so you don't get as much exploration around it on this side. You know,
it's not. It hasn't been commercialized either.
Right.
You know, there's the commercialization of spirit, you know, and things like that. And that we know, we really focus on holding the frequency there and in service, you know, that's our main push there. And I've had people come. I've had a lot of people, even Bill Gates tried to come and buy it. And I said, not going to happen. You know, I said, this has a higher purpose. But it's, you know, to me, it's like I'm more serving the land and serving the higher consciousness and energy there. It's not about me, and it's not about making a bunch of money, and it's not about, you know, and it is educational, though. It is about getting the word out. And I'm really curious, what do you think about, I mean, these disclosure things that are coming out? I mean, the last ones were very controlled. You know, the narrative is
yeah.
very controlled. And the government was all over these other ones, although people have a hard time believing that. They don't understand about planned opposition and how
exactly
that works. But what do you think about the new group in town, you know, that's coming out and going to tell us what's going on?
Yeah, I really never take any information from official sources. I typically ignore it, because they always have their own agenda, and the agenda is usually connected to control of the people and to make them believe down a certain pathway. So I try and understand from multiple sources of information in my own remote viewing and my own intuitive sense and my own connection with my higher self and spirit guides and stuff to really understand what's truly happening. And I guess it would be awesome if there was disclosure from the standpoint of free energy type situation, because this anti-gravity mechanism also goes into free energy, and human race can sure use something like that. But I do not believe anything like that will ever happen from official sources. Now that's one side. Now the other side is that I personally do not need the government to tell me that aliens exist when I've had my own contact. Any person can have their own contact. I've had, like you, I've had face-to-face, literal physical contact with different beings, my whole life. I was abducted when I was a child by the Greys. And then when I started doing remote viewing, I had aliens show up. After we have had remote viewing, they'd show up physically and benevolent type beings, and they would end up working with us in a certain capacity. They would have projects they wanted us to do. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like I know that there are so many different types of species coming and visiting this planet from so many different dimensions, and I have access to it, and every single human has access to it. You don't need the government to tell you they're real or not real.
Right. Yeah, I believe the same way. What I always tell people, I said, they're keeping you external. You're waiting for this group to come and fix everything.
Right.
And everything is external. And you're waiting for this guy who's had an experience to tell you what they said, to tell you what to do, what your next move is going to be, and things like that. And I tell people it's internal. It's the more you go within, you're going to have your own contact. You're going to have your own experience. And you're going to see all of the known masters along the way and ETs. And also you need to learn how to sort out, who you want to work with, because...
Right.
We always say just because you're dead doesn't mean you're enlightened, and just because you're an ET doesn't mean you're benevolent,
Exactly.
But there are people out there saying that, they're all benevolent. Just let anything come into your body and work through you. And I won't mention his name, but whenever I just cringe when he says that, I go, oh my God, setting people up, for possession, basically.
Yeah, it's a little scary.
Yeah, and there's some things you just don't want on your back, you don't want to be plugging into your energy out there. And I think it's, an extreme disservice to people to not kind of teach them how to, shield up and heal any unseen negative influence and use discernment as well.
Yeah, discernment's huge, and that's what we don't have, because we've let the powers that be take it away from us, Everybody's just waiting for somebody to tell them what to do and how to do it, instead of figuring it out yourself based on your own gut. Yeah.
It looks like where we're going right now is all the authority figures are imploding. All the agencies, all the authority figures. Now we're finding out that they have not been working on our highest and best good and have not been in service mode or fulfilling their mandates. And I think that's a good thing. And the more people get disenchanted with that, the more they're going to start going within and stop expecting some external force to tell them what's going on or take care of them or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's my standpoint as well. It does look like it's imploding.
Yeah, I'd like to throw a little fire on some of that. I have been, actually, but get a little feedback from that one, a little backlash, but... anyway, I have fun with it though. It's like, nice shot. Try that. Let's try that one again. It's like,
when you have I really think it's important that as humans, we begin to shift away from a completely materialistic standpoint and at least live half of our lives from a spiritual standpoint. I'd like to have my whole life and everybody's life from a complete spiritual standpoint. As opposed to just gaining and trying to make money Because I think that's really leading the human race down the wrong path. Well, it is the wrong path.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, we've done a lot of viewing on off-planet civilizations. And when you get into civilizations that are just a little bit higher than where the Earth is, you have a different, totally different society construct. There is no money. There is no, well, there's no slavery like we have it. I mean, we're debt slaves here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The time is mostly spent pursuing spiritual interests as opposed to money interests. You work maybe one day a week, or you work for maybe 3 years of your life working for the good of all people, and then you go and pursue your own interest, and everything's provided for because there's enough for everybody. And you know, and it's funny because I came into this life with that sensation, that feeling of, wait, we have to work in something we don't want to work in for most of our lives, or most people do. Yeah. This doesn't make any sense to me. I thought this was supposed to be a spiritual pursuit here only.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you can take that and turn it into a spiritual pursuit, but it's really more of a material pursuit.
Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, I know like a lot of the Palladian cultures, they don't lack for anything. You know, they have beam ships that can go anywhere in the multiverse, basically, they want to, and they live, you know, pretty much a simple life, but they have extreme technology, and they're very service oriented. They know that everything's connected, and they see the creator in all creation, but they lack for nothing, basically. You know, they have their androids too that take care of some of the things that they don't want to deal with, but you know, it's amazing. People cannot wrap their head around when you tell somebody, you know, your car, you could actually run your car on water, and
right.
They have a hard time figuring that out, and then you go, well, actually, you could run your car on free energy. You know, if you have an electric car, there's devices you could hook up and you could drive the wheels on off of that, and then that's a hard one for people to wrap their head around. And you go, well, let's take it to the next level. You know, your car may not even need tires.
And, yeah,
or a fuel source, you know, and that's even harder to wrap. But all that technology exists today.
That does,
and extreme healing technologies as well. I mean, they can reproduce any organ in your body. You know, they can print one out basically, and there's some pretty crazy technology out there that I think we need to start getting into the private sector.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. Yeah, you know, you bring up Pleiadians. Okay, so I wanted to bring up a type of being that shows up there that we remote viewed.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask you where this being comes from, because I know that you've experienced this particular being. So this being can be very shy, especially when we remote view it in its location, traveling through the mountain. And it's not just this one being, but it seems to be predominant. There are others like it, and what they do, they're a higher vibration. They're probably fourth, fifth dimensional. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. But they use the mountain to pass through. And you know, in our sessions, we saw that they kind of combine themselves with another sentient energy, which is more of related to our Earth, and they fly around in it, kind of like they become part of it. And a lot of what you guys film are these almost like ships. They're ships, but they're two sentient energies that have come together to fly around. It's very strange. It's really strange. That's what we saw with remote viewing. But so the being that connects with this energy to fly around is cat-like, feline-like.
Oh, yeah.
And the viewers describe this being and others like it over and over as being one of the predominant things associated with the stuff that you guys are capturing on film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm curious, you know, from your standpoint, because I know you've experienced that, and I even think Walter experienced that from
Surf and Truth. Yeah, he did,
So what is this being? Who is this being?
Well, there's three different sets of them that we've experienced, and they go from the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimension. They cover those three dimensions, And one of the beings is a feline. It's humanoid feline being, very beautiful, very protective too. They're very beautiful, yeah. Very loving, very protective. And actually, I work with one by the name of Bagheet, who comes around quite a bit, and I just love her energy. Very, and they're very playful too. They, you know, they're very agile. They can either run on two or all fours, or just appear as a light and take off. And they're very graceful. Very graceful beings. There's a sixth dimensional one that's more of a panther, and we had a guy up there named Khan, who is a, you know, he does 21-day retreats in a cave, like dark retreats, just water, nothing else.
Wow.
And very tapped in, and he got a photograph of these sixth dimensional ones, and they're also from Sirius. These both groups are from Sirius, and
yeah,
then.
Okay.
And then there's these lion beings that are about 17 feet tall. They're huge. And when they started appearing to me, I had no idea who they were. You know, and you kind of check yourself. You go, am I like going crazy or what, you know?
Yeah.
I go, who are you? Look up, you see this being, and he's just laughing and smiling. And they're kind of jokesters because they are so huge and so powerful. They have to act goofy so we don't get freaked out by them. But they're very loving, very protective, and we work with one by the name of Bacall and Ika and some of the, there's a whole bunch of them that we work with, and they were the protectors of the gods. They walked right alongside the Anunnaki, and Sekhmet was one of them. Sekhmet's about 14 feet tall. Her statue, the females were about 14 feet tall, 15 feet tall. The males are about, you know, between 16 and 17 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah. This is interesting because, you know, we've taken to, we'll often do sessions on, stars from that we know of from planet Earth, you know, from this perspective, and see what's around there. And around Vega, the star Vega, we did find a planet there that had life. And so we started going there on a regular basis. You know, this was all blind remote viewing at first when we started this. And then we saw, well, what you're describing, the beings that you're describing are I got to tell you, they're very similar to the beings that we're seeing over there. In fact, there's a sort of a dimensional meeting area where many different species from all over the universe go to meet and go forward and help other planets and situations with one mind. And you find, like what you're saying, these huge lion type creatures, literally 17 feet tall. We also find that we'll see kind of Hindu gods as well as Anunnaki in this location as well. Boy, you know, actually, you know, when we do the class up there, we're going to have to talk about this and do a couple trips, I think.
Yeah. They call, the Hindus call him Narissa.
And Narissa.
Yeah, and he's huge. I mean, he's the protector of the gods, and they show him right next to the Hindu gods as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are very well recorded in history. And, you know, I have the experience first, and then I have to do the research to figure out what's going on.
Exactly, right?
yeah, but they're everywhere. They're on the Federation ships. They're in the Vega system. They're in Lyra. Ancient Lyra. There are a lot of different places, but their main system they're in right now is they come from the Sirius system, the ones that we've been working with.
Okay.
And I think there might be a gate there that they come through. I'm not sure. I have to look into that, but I think they actually come through a gate in that system, and they actually have a planet or whatever that they some people call them the Pashat, you know, that's one group too. They have different names for them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's the same thing here. It's, you know, we started experiencing this stuff and then we have to figure out what the heck it is, if there's any conventional or channeling research at the very least on it, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I'm like you. I want to get my own information, have my own experiences, and I try to stay away from other people's things.
Right.
But I'll listen to him. And then everybody wants me to say, hey, is this guy for real? Is this guy for real? And I said, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on out there, and that's his experience, you know, or not. I don't know. And all I can talk about is my experience, you know, and I'm not here to give people a report card, you know, on who's who out there. But I have seen some groups that profess to be working with certain beings, and you look behind them and there's a big reptilian standing there. I've seen that happen quite a bit.
Yeah.
They didn't use discernment, you know. They think they're working with Pleiadians or somebody else, and then they have a big big reptilian standing
yeah.
there. Or a reptilian yeah. gray hybrid. Those are some of the great ones, the ones that are really coming in and messing with people right now.
Yeah, yeah. Not fun. Not good.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not fun to play with.
Yeah.
You know, we've covered so many things. I'm going to have you on the show again.
Yeah, let's do this again.
Yeah, there's so many other areas. We're actually running out of time, unfortunately. But what's the best way for people to get in contact with you if they want to find out more about your work and your courses?
Oh, head to my website, righthemispheric.com. I'll be posting the class to send them over to your website to register, or eSETI Events, I think.
Yeah.
And... yeah, all the information is there. I have a book out, The Time for the Secret Words. I also have a YouTube channel. You can find that off my website as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I can't wait for you to come up to the ranch. I think you're going to be like a kid in a candy store up there.
I know it.
There's so much going on. But anyway, thanks so much for coming on the show. And hey, maybe we'll send you some more things to remote view before
you come
up. Let's
do it. Yeah, send me some projects. I'm waiting.
All right. Sounds great.
All right, James.
Thanks again for coming on the show.
Okay. Bye.
All right. We're out of time, folks, unfortunately. This is James Glenn with As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Network signing off. Just remember, you know, keep an open mind, loving.